court is ready to hear argument from petitioners in Gilbert versus El Paso County Hospital District.
May it please the court, Mr. John P. Moss will present argument to petitioners. Petitioners have reserved 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Good morning. This case presents a straightforward question of statutory interpretation. The Texas Truth in Taxation Law requires...
Certainly not an easy one.
Well, it wouldn't be here if it was easy.
Right.
The Truth in Taxation Law requires taxing units to disclose to the taxpayers their unencumbered balance of general funds. The Court of Appeals held that this requirement was limited to disclosing that portion of the general fund which has been derived from tax revenues. And the petitioners, who are tax-paying property owners in El Paso County, assert that this limitation cannot be drawn from the language of the statute, from the history of the statute, or most importantly, from the purpose of the statute.
What about the comptroller's guidelines?
The statute authorizes the comptroller to prescribe the form of disclosure, not the substance of the disclosure.
Well, it says she'll disclose it on the form.
That's right.
Set out by the comptroller.
Shall disclose to the property owners in the form prescribed by the comptroller six specific types of information.
Well, it's not on the form. So what, do they write it in the margin? Or?
Well, the instructions accompanying the form say you can add additional columns if you have to. In addition, the form, the limitation that the respondents have read into the form comes from the fact that the form describes the fund as a type of property tax fund. Property taxes are deposited into the general fund of the taxing unit. Other sources of revenue are also deposited into the same fund. The deposit of other types of revenue into that general fund doesn't necessarily cause that fund to lose its character as a type of property tax fund. And so the fact that there are additional balances in there that may not have come from property tax revenue doesn't mean the general fund is not a type of property tax fund, and doesn't necessarily mean that the form's description of the fund as a type of property tax fund limits the disclosure of the balance of that fund to the portion of the balance drawn from property tax revenues.
What are other hospitals doing? Do you know? What have they been doing since 92? Because that's how long the form's been.
Judge, there's nothing in the record to answer that question. The Tarrant County Hospital District filed an amicus brief with the Court of Appeals saying we do it the same way. The El Paso Hospital District has historically done it. My understanding is that there are other taxing entities which do it the other way, and read the statute the way the petitioners read it.
Why did the comptroller change the form?
Don't know. No answer to that. It wasn't changed by any sort of formal regulation or rule that was proposed through the Texas Register. It was just changed. And that's a good question. From 82 through 87 or 88, there was no limitation to type of property tax fund. The statutory requirement to disclose general fund balances was enacted in 81. For some reason, they started using that language, type of property tax fund, again, not necessarily to limit the disclosure to that portion of the fund balance drawn from property taxes, but they started using that language.
Respondents say that if they have to disclose dispro funds, they'll lose them, and then if they have to disclose dispro funds, voters will vote against the tax increase, then they'll lose the funds, then they'll go broke. What's the answer to that?
Might happen. I mean, Section 2604 is a notice provision. It doesn't directly affect the tax rate. It doesn't affect whether or not a rollback election occurs. But it does disclose to the taxpayers that information that the legislature believed taxpayers would find relevant to deciding whether or not to petition for a tax rate rollback election. If dispro funds and cafeteria revenue and patient revenue and parking lot revenue are included in the general fund balance that has to be disclosed, consistent with the plain language of the statute, then there's going to be a higher number in that blank. And a taxpayer might conceivably look at that and say, well, they've got all these millions of dollars, $120 million sitting there. They don't need to raise my taxes. And in that case, petition for a rollback of any tax increase to the rollback rate, which I think is 8% in excess of the effective tax rate.
Do you happen to know whether or not before 1992 did the district list all sources of revenue?
I don't know. No, I'm sorry.
So, and so you wouldn't know whether or not if prior to 1992 they were listing all sources of revenue, whether or not there were problems with the DISPRO funds?
I don't think that. I think the DISPRO funds are relatively new development, so I don't think that would have been a problem at that time. But the case is not about DISPRO funds per se. It's about all funds and all sources of revenue. There's no distinction, no material distinction between DISPRO funds or cafeteria revenue for purposes of applying Section 2604. Section 2604E2 just says disclose your general fund balance or your estimated maintenance and operations or general fund balance at the end of the fiscal year that's not encumbered by corresponding existing debt obligation. The legislature could very easily have said disclose your unspent taxes, disclose your remaining balance of tax accumulated from prior years. But instead they used the broader term maintenance and operations fund balance or general fund balance. And I think that's a significant distinction in the legislative language. If they'd intended that taxing units disclose only the amount of tax money they have left over, that would have been a very easy thing to write into the statute. General fund balance does not at least seem to mean tax unspent tax balance. One problem, well, let me say this. In setting the tax rate, the appropriate consideration for the governmental entity and the governing board of that entity is not whether or not we spend all of our past taxes, but what are our financial needs for the coming year? What do we project our expenses will be? What do we project our revenue will be from all sources? How much money do we have left over from last year? And how much do we need to make up by additional taxes? And in evaluating a proposed tax rate increase, likewise, the relevant question for a taxpayer is not whether or not the taxing unit has spent all of the tax money from the past years, but how much money it has left, regardless of the source of that money. One problem with the Court of Appeals analysis is that it permits taxing units to manipulate their disclosures in the form just by the bookkeeping method that they choose. In its internal accounting, a hospital district or other taxing entity can decide to allocate its expenditures first towards tax revenue or first towards other sources of revenue and last to tax revenue or really proportionally or anywhere in between. So if you would hypothesize two taxing entities in the same position as the El Paso County Hospital District having revenue in excess of expenses but tax revenue that's less than expenses, then if one of them allocates its expenses first towards tax revenue and the other allocates its expenses first towards other sources of revenue and last towards tax revenue, then under the Court of Appeals interpretation of the statute, the one that allocates the expenses first towards tax revenue will disclose zero fund balance. The one that allocates expenses first towards other revenue will each year disclose an increasing general fund balance, even though they have the same amount of money in their general fund and the same amount of money on hand. As a taxpayer, you shouldn't have to investigate the bookkeeping method used by your taxing units in order to understand their truth in taxation disclosures. And the taxing unit, likewise, shouldn't be able to manipulate those disclosures just by the bookkeeping method it chooses in deciding how it's going to account for its expenditures. We talked a little bit about the form, and again, the form says has a heading type of property tax fund and directs taxing units to disclose the balances left in their property tax accounts. Again, I don't read that language to necessarily foreclose disclosure of all of the money left in those accounts, even if it wasn't initially drawn from tax revenue. But again, if it does, then it's in conflict with the language of the statute. And the statute only authorizes the controller to prescribe the form of the disclosure, not the substance of the disclosure. And the statute's very clear on the types of information that must be disclosed.
The Court of Appeals, in essence, held that you have to read this statute to ensure voters the kind of information that they need and ought to rely on in order to decide whether to vote for an increase or a rollback.
Well, I think that's the purpose of the statute. I wouldn't agree that that's how the Court of Appeals read it.
And they say that's how the hospital's disclosure serves that purpose. Because if you think from looking at this surplus that you could roll back taxes, all you're going to end up with is either a defunct hospital or more taxes, which you said might happen.
It might happen. But that's a decision the taxpayers are entitled to make.
Why is the Court of Appeals right that the information that the hospital's given is not misleading in that regard?
The information that the hospital is giving is disclosing zero fund balance, even though it has a very large general fund balance. That's what makes it misleading. Whether or not the taxpayers will decide to not contest a tax increase or petition for a rate rollback should be based on the general fund balance maintained by the taxing unit, just as the statute says. The taxpayers don't care whether the money came from last year's taxes or the last 10 years' taxes or DSPRO funds or from the cafeteria. It doesn't matter in deciding whether or not the taxes should be increased to pay next year's bills. All that matters is that the money's there and there's no restriction on its use. It's unencumbered by existing debt obligation.
The balance of the tax revenues that are on hand, using the hospital district's interpretation, have absolutely nothing to do with calculating the effective tax rate or the rollback rate. Is
that
correct?
That is correct.
So basically, for purposes, as the Court of Appeals discussed, this is a statute designed to allow taxpayers to know what the effective tax rate is and to make a determination whether to petition for a rollback or not. The way the Court of Appeals interpreted the statute is really meaningless with respect to that determination. Is that correct?
I would agree.
They seem to imply that knowing the property tax revenue had something to do with effective tax rates and rollback rates, but that's not the case.
Well, the balance of unspent property taxes has nothing to do with calculating the effective tax rates, rollback rate, any of the other ratios. The Court of Appeals seemed to imply that it did. I don't think that's correct. The real question is, what should the taxpayers be told in deciding whether or not they want to petition for a tax rate rollback? The Court of Appeals seemed to believe that taxpayers should only be told, under the language of the statute, whether or not previous year's tax revenues had all been spent. In fact, the petitioners contend that the relevant question is, what's the general fund balance? What's the balance of funds that were allocated in your internal accounting to property taxes? I'd like to turn briefly to the good faith issue, which the respondents have asserted as an alternative basis for affirmance. This suit was brought both under the Declaratory Judgments Act and under Section 26.04G of the tax code. The latter provision allows taxpayers to seek an injunction against a responsible person within a taxing unit who has failed to comply with the statute where that failure to comply was not in good faith. So if this court were to address the good faith issue and determine that the trial court's decision on that issue was erroneous, that would be grounds for affirming the Court of Appeals' reversal of the injunction. It would not be grounds for affirming the Court of Appeals' reversal of the declaratory judgment. So I want to make that distinction right out. That's only a basis for partial affirmance, not affirmance of the entire Court of Appeals judgment.
Was standing also an issue raised in the Court of Appeals?
Standing was an issue raised in the Court of Appeals that has not been brought forward here.
And it was not decided
in the Court of Appeals. That's right.
And if we decide under the declaratory judgment, we don't need to get into the good faith.
Correct. Yes. Good faith only goes to the question of whether or not the injunction was proper. The petitioners contend that the respondents did not act in good faith because prior to this lawsuit, there was another lawsuit involving the very same issue in El Paso County against the respondents. And they lost that suit. The judge in that suit determined that they were required to disclose their entire general fund balance, not just the portion allocated by them to tax revenue. They didn't appeal that judgment. Apparently, the judgment was decided, the case was decided after they adopted their tax rates for 96, and they felt like it was moot. The trial court in this case found the issues were capable of repetition and evading review. But the point is, there was a judgment against them. They didn't challenge it, and they still decided not to abide by it. They just ignored that judgment in their disclosures for future years. Now, they may have, prior to that judgment, been able to read the statute or read the form and in good faith believe that they were only required to disclose that portion of their fund that they had allocated to tax revenue. But once that judgment was entered, once the judiciary branch interpreted the law, they no longer have the discretion to say, well, no, that's wrong. It, when it especially was a case that they were a party to, they can't...
That's not briefed before us, correct?
That's right. The petitioners have not briefed the good faith issue because it was not addressed in the court of appeals. It is brought forward by the respondents in their response to the petition for review.
Well, yes, but not as you're presenting it. I mean, there's nothing in the record before us about another judgment that didn't comply with and how that could relate to good or bad faith.
It's in the record. I haven't briefed it before the court. It's at, I believe, page 308 of the clerk's record and defendant's exhibit 2 to the reporter's record.
The other judgment?
Yes. And that's the basis for the trial court's finding that there was no, there was a lack of good faith. Because that issue was not addressed by the Court of Appeals, the petitioners did not bring it forward to this court and not brief it to this court. But that is the basis for the argument that they did not act in good faith, and certainly if the court would like a brief on that issue, the petitioners would be glad to brief it for the court.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Ken Slavin will present argument for respondents.
May it please the court. I tend to focus my response on three main areas. First, whether the meaning of maintenance and operation balances or general fund balances that's in the statute is entitled to some plain and ordinary meaning, or does it have some sort of specialized meaning in the context of the Texas property tax code? The second area I intend to focus on is the deference, if any, to the comptroller's construction of that provision, and the third is the good faith requirement of 26.04G that is a requirement to bring this kind of suit. Some basic stipulated facts. This case was presented on stipulated facts. And some of those stipulated facts are important, I believe, to the court's consideration. One is that each year the hospital district spends all its property tax revenues for maintenance and operations and debt service expenses.
How do we know that?
It's stipulated by both parties.
Is this a stipulated facts or an agreed statement under Rule 263?
It's a stipulated fact.
So the court had areas that it could decide fact issues?
It was actually, I think it's titled Stipulated Findings of Fact. It's also stipulated that the hospital district excludes its DISPRO funds and Medicaid disproportionate share funds from its fund balances and segregates those in an investment trust account, investments in treasury notes. Now, beginning with the area of statutory construction, plain meaning, I think one of the themes of my argument would be context. Context is what we have to look at this sub-provision in relation to the entire statute. What we're dealing here with is a portion of a subsection, a portion of a subsection of a subsection of Section 26.04 of Chapter 26 of the Texas Property Code. And I think as this court recently reiterated in the Texas Workers' Comp case versus Dell Industrial, that we don't view disputed portions of statutes in isolation. We look at the statutory scheme, where it comes from, and how it impacts in that. And whether or not there is an ambiguity there. We certainly have the ability under Section 311.023 of the Government Code to look at things such as former provisions and similar laws, the consequences of a particular construction. We've talked about that at the petitioner, answered some questions about that. The object sought to be obtained, the administrative construction of the statute, and even the title of the statute. 26.04 is titled Submission of Appraisal Roll to Governing Body Effective and Rollback Tax Rates. 26.04E is the publication and notice provision that the court is focusing on generally. And actually, it's 26.04E2 that says the estimated amount of interest and sinking fund balances and the estimated amount of maintenance and operation or general fund balances remaining at the end of the current fiscal year that are not encumbered with or by corresponding existing debt obligation. So, in a mouthful, what we're focusing on really is what did the legislature mean by maintenance and operation or general fund balances and interest in seeking and sinking fund balances. And the Court of Appeals went through a very detailed look in the contextual aspect of this to try to come up with what in the world were we trying to get to here in construing the statute. Now, of course, legislative intent is still the goal that we are looking for.
So the hospital sells its services. Does it? The hospital district sells services. People can go to the hospital and buy medical services. But that probably provides also indigent health care.
Yes, it does.
So we anticipate the taxes will cover some of the expenses of running that hospital because the income that the hospital generates won't meet all those expenses.
That's correct.
And so assuming that you have entities like this that serve both the private and public sector and they have income and they have expenses, then the fact that it's in the property tax code where it subsidizes this service, how do we then read the property tax code to say when we say a general fund balance, we don't mean the total in their checking account. We just mean the total in their checking account that came from only one source of revenue.
Well, there are several issues that you raise with that. Number one is, well, that's what we're trying to find out. What did the legislature mean by that? It did not say, and what I believe the petitioners are asking this court to do is rewrite the statute to say that all funds on hand need to be reported. And if you read that statute that I just read to you, it does not say that. It talks about debt and sinking fund balances and maintenance and operation or general fund balances.
What's a general fund balance?
I don't know what it means in that. It's not defined in that. But you know what? We do have, under Chapter 26, a definition of maintenance and operation.
I understand, we know what M&O is and we know what interest and sinking fund balances are. That's the debt service. Then that leaves us with what does the general fund balance mean? And when you talk about, I mean, that's a pretty broad term, isn't it? How could that term be interpreted to mean just property tax revenue?
Well, I believe it's modified by maintenance. I believe they equate in the statute maintenance and operation or general fund balances. Now, which do you choose? If they don't mean the same thing, so I think we take the general term and we go back to the limiting term. It either means the same thing.
So you think general fund means the same thing as M&O?
I believe the statute directs
but aren't
you,
that.
Where does the statute direct that?
It says maintenance and operation or general fund.
Well, to me that means, doesn't mean that they're the same thing.
All right, so
why would that not be a redundancy?
Do you get to choose which one? Let's assume they're not the same thing. Let's assume they're not the same thing. Which one do you choose?
Both.
It says or. It doesn't say and. It says you disclose the maintenance and operations or general fund balances. So I'd submit to the court that you have to look at what the legislature defined as maintenance and operations, not a perfectly drafted statute in any stretch of the imagination, but I believe unless we're really going to have confusion, do we pick to disclose maintenance and operation fund balances or do we pick to...
Is anything else besides property tax revenue used to fund M&O?
Yes.
So yes, maintenance and operation could have other things in it.
It could.
Besides property tax revenue.
It could. And that's my point is That's why these are specialized.
That's not just property tax revenue? That must be directed towards maintenance and operation, or other sources of revenue are used to fund maintenance and operation?
Other sources of revenue are used to fund maintenance.
Well, it's the same trend with the general fund balance. More than property taxes are put into the account.
Yes, it is.
How can you read either maintenance and operation or general fund balances if you emphasize the or to only mean property tax revenue, if in fact those terms also refer to other sources of revenue?
I read it that way because the section 26.04 provides some definition, and the overall context of it gets to the focus of what I believe the legislature was on, was property tax revenues, how you spend those, and what's left of those.
Well, but the balance of the property tax, balance of property, this statute also is obviously dealing with effective and rollback tax rights. Do you agree with counsel that the amount of property tax revenue left at the end of the year is not material to the determination of the effective tax rate or the rollback tax rate?
Not directly. It doesn't come into a calculation.
It doesn't go into the calculations
That's correct.
Why would it be important to know the amount of property tax revenue left as opposed to the amount of total revenue left?
Because the tax...
I ask that question because you keep talking about context, and I'm not understanding your argument.
I'm sorry. Let me be clear.
Okay.
The legislature is focused on property tax... This is a property tax code provision. We'll start there. Chapter 26 deals with property taxes, effective and rollback rate. We have this provision that is unclear. What are you trying, in truth and taxation, what are you trying to get that's important to taxpayers that doesn't go into the calculation? And are we talking about entire revenues on hand? Of course, the statute doesn't say that. Are we talking about maintenance and operation funds, remaining property tax revenues as the comptroller has construed it? Are we talking about something else? And so in trying to answer that question, I believe we have to look at the context of what we're given by the legislature, including their definitions and their focus on the entire provision. As far as why would it be important to know for unspent property tax revenues, because the public needs to know if those are needed.
Well, wouldn't it be important for the public to know how much revenue was on hand? So that we would, for example, money that came in as a result of income to the hospital for paying patients, wouldn't it be important for a taxpayer to know how much revenue remained from that source of income if the taxpayer was going to make a determination as to whether or not to petition for a rollback?
It is, and they do, but it's not. That is public information. The budgets, the financial statements are all approved in the open hearing. So my point is that is a red herring in this context, because this statute is focused on property tax revenues and remaining balances unspent for these purposes.
Well, but you keep going back to context, and I'm playing devil's advocate with you that if I'm looking at context and I'm a taxpayer and I'm going to make this determination, before you raise my property tax rate and I decide to sit back and not petition for rollback if, in fact, the rate increases the 8% over the effective tax rate, before I do that, I want to know how much money you have. I don't care where you got it. If you're sitting on millions of dollars as a result of the medical services that people paid for, I'd like to know that, because you may not need my property taxes then. So when you talk about context, I'm not understanding why the information I would want as a taxpayer is limited to information related to property tax revenue as opposed to all sources of revenue.
What we're dealing with in this case for the purposes of my client is all Medicaid disproportionate share funds. That is what is in the
right,
hospital
I'm
district.
I'm going to go back to the statutory interpretation question that you've asked us to focus our attention on. Why, as a taxpayer, would I only want to know information about property tax revenue as opposed to all revenue that remained if I'm going to make a decision about whether I want to be proactive as a taxpayer?
You may want to know that information. And number one, that information is available. It's public information about what sources they have. Number two, that information, if the legislature had wanted them to be disclosed that, they would have said that in the statute. Tell us what all funds are on hand. That's
but
not the what
thing,
the statute
but the thing
says.
Is that the statute deals with more than the disclosure provision. The statute deals with more than just property taxes. It talks about sales and use tax. It talks about debt service. It talks about all kinds of other things besides property tax revenue and what the proposed rates are. So it is if you look at context, don't we have a broader context presented in terms of the notice of provision as opposed to a more limited one? Isn't that what the statute seems to do?
I do not believe that when you look at the other provisions of 26.04 and the definitions it uses in those provisions.
Which definitions are you referring to?
I'm talking about maintenance and operation. The definition of maintenance and operation.
Which we would find where?
Which you will find at 26.012 subsection 16 in the very chapter 26 that we're talking about. And it defines maintenance and operations as means any lawful purpose other than debt service for which a taxing unit may spend property tax revenues. And I have that raises two observations. One, it's a much broader meaning than I would put on maintenance and operations. And two, its focus is on the spending of property tax revenue. So it goes, and from my view, to make sense that if you're focused on the spending of property tax revenues, then the balance of those unspent property tax revenues is what they want to be reported. So if we're dealing with a maintenance and operation fund, that talks about maintenance and operations being the expenditure of property tax revenues, then it seems logical to conclude that what's left unspent of those funds is what the statute intends to.
Is there any place we can find a definition of general fund balances?
I was not able to find one.
Do you know what other hospitals do? Besides Tarrant County, who thinks you're right?
Tarrant County report. I do believe all of the hospitals that receive disproportionate share funds report it this way.
The way the
hospital.
And what's that belief based on?
I've met with the group of those hospitals, and they've told me that. That's not in the record, you know, but that's what I understand.
And why did the comptroller change the form in 92? Any idea on that?
I can only speculate that he read the statute and decided that this was the logical construction of the statute.
He'd been wrong before.
Been wrong before. But he also is charged statutorily.
Was this a sui sponte change on the behalf of the comptroller at the time?
It appears to have been. But it's been that way since 1992, and we've now had three amendments of this very statutory provision without any change since 1992.
We had nine amendments before the change, didn't we?
That's true. Maybe no one's paying attention. That's also one possible remedy. But it's not only the maintenance and operation definition in the statute that I was looking at in terms of contextual a review of this. A debt, if the definition talks about that aren't encumbered by corresponding existing debt obligation. Debt is also defined in 26.0127, and it means different than I would think debt would mean. Indebtedness owed by a taxing unit payable solely from property tax revenues pledged to the debt and that are not budgeted for payment from the maintenance and operations fund. So again, we have another clue in trying to discern the legislative intent that they're focused on as the words that are in this statute that you're trying to construe, the definitions that come out. Again, we're focused on property tax revenues that are not used for maintenance and operation fund. So again,
isn't that because when the taxing is done, a certain amount is taxed for debt service and a certain amount is taxed for maintenance and operations?
That's correct.
Because the
property taxes are divided into two categories.
They're divided that way and they're generated slightly differently. And so that's why you've got this division, because the money each has a separate tax rate attached to it and a separate authorization for it.
Yeah, exactly. And when we're looking at what is the meaning of interest and sinking fund and maintenance and operation fund, it's consistent with that to show that they're focused on property tax revenues. And if they're focused on how you spend them, certainly they're focused on what remains of those that did not get spent.
Mr. Slavin, let me ask you, this is a notice provision. to taxpayers. And there's probably going to be a sense that it ought to be interpreted broadly, inclusively, because, after all, it's noticed to the public. And so, I mean, there may be an impetus to say, well, it could be a close question, but we ought to err in favor of open government. What policy is there for why the hospital district would find that it is not in the public's best interest to know the total amount in the general fund or maintenance and operation? I'll tell you where my question's going. It struck me that you said those hospital districts that receive DSPRO funds do it your way. Yeah. So I'm giving you an opening here. Is there some policy reason why hospitals doing that should not be faced with a notion that you ought to broadly construe notice provisions?
Yes, the Medicaid disproportionate share funds are not general funds. They are restricted use funds, and that is all the hospital has segregated into these treasury notes. The regulations, it used to be a formal one, it's now in Chapter 1, Section 355 of the Texas Administrative Code, the identical provision, states that you cannot use those funds to reduce your property taxes. And also, you must use those funds for indigent care. And if you don't do that, you will lose those funds, which would be devastating to these hospitals that
now
receive those funds.
When did DSPRO funds come into existence?
I'm not sure.
There were some major medical bills passed in 91 and 92 that I'm aware of dealing with doctors' ability to accept Medicare funds, but they couldn't have ancillary businesses and that sort of thing. Is this a possible, the change of the form by the controller, could it be tied? Are you aware that might be tied to some sort of federal statutes having to deal with these DSPRO funds or anything?
I'm not, but I think that would be important to probably provide the court in some sort of leverage. I have not researched that, so I do not know if there's a correlation. I did try to look and see why the comptroller, if there's anything that would explain why the comptroller's form now goes the way it has since 1992. I wasn't able to find anything specifically on that.
Would you clarify one of those things you just said, that the DSPRO funds come solely from where?
They're federal government grants to hospitals that serve disproportionate low-income patients.
So money that comes from other sources can't be hidden under that category?
That's true, and that's why they're segregated and separated.
Why, as a practical matter, have they been accumulating so much in this case?
The reason they've been, it's saving for a rainy day, and they're rapidly depleting those funds as we speak. As increased care comes in, we're enrolling, lots more low-income children and other things. And this hospital was established to serve indigents statutorily. So it has an obligation to do that, and it has been saving for specific projects. Certainly they don't want to engage in a project that's going to require ongoing maintenance, and these funds dry up, which often they come and they go. So they have held them back mainly from a conservative basis to make sure, one, that it goes to where it goes, and they're not going to obligate themselves to get into a problem that the funds are cut, and then they have to maintain some clinic that they started that they now don't have the revenue to maintain.
Do these funds have to go to direct patient care?
They can go to, is my understanding, it's the limit is just you have to show that it was used for indigent care.
My question is, how broad is that? Can they use that to pay the light bill?
I think it is broader than that, but you have to establish a connection.
Do you agree that listing the DSPRO fund doesn't necessarily, or disclosing these DSPRO funds to the public doesn't necessarily jeopardize those funds? Is it the district's concern that in some way the DSPRO funds might be jeopardized?
If you don't keep a wall between those funds and property tax notices, if there is a tax increase and those funds someone can argue because of those funds, the tax increase was rolled back. I think you jeopardize your DSPRO funds. Because the argument would be made that those funds were used to decrease taxes that had been raised.
But it's public information.
That argument could be made anyway, whether or not you disclose it.
It is public information. It is public information.
Let's clarify something. The thing here that you did not report, that they wanted reported, was your primary operating account.
Correct. I've seen that term. I don't know where that term is in the record.
The request was not that you disclose your DSPRO funds. The request was that you report, your general remaining leftover funds, which could include some DSPRO funds, but could also include some non-DSPRO funds, correct?
They want to, under the petition for review, they ask for all funds on hand.
Let me ask you this way. Part of the funds that have not been disclosed include DSPRO funds, correct?
All of the funds, from my client's perspective, all of the funds that were remaining at the end, if you looked at all funds, they were all DSPRO funds. The hospital, if you exclude DSPRO funds under the stipulation, you'll see that they spent every penny from all other sources of revenue to run the hospital. In fact, the Court of Appeals noted that they would have been in a loss position without those DSPRO funds. All funds on hand that are remaining are all Medicaid DSPRO funds.
So you disclose absolutely everything except for DSPRO funds?
It just happens to be they're disclosing property tax. There could be a scenario where maybe those revenues were more than the property. There were some property tax revenues that remained unspent. I assume it could be a scenario. But a hospital that gets $32 million in property tax and spends $143 million to operate it, I think we're far from that occurring.
Any other questions? Thank you, Councilman.
Thank you.
Let me talk first about the context and second about the policy. If the quotes that Mr. Slavin read from the statute show us anything, they show that when the legislature wanted to use the words property tax in the statute, it knew how to use those words. And if it had intended to limit the disclosure to property tax revenue, it could very easily have limited the disclosure requirement to tax revenue balances.
Council, can you say, though, that DSPRO funds are part of the general fund balances or the maintenance operation balances if, in fact, they're kept segregated and by law are limited in their use? Where do the DSPRO funds fit into the words that are used in the statute?
I think the DSPRO funds are part of the maintenance and operations fund balance or general fund balance.
Even though they are required to be kept segregated and are limited by law as to their use?
Well, I'm not sure that they're required to be kept segregated. I think that the El Paso County Hospital District does segregate them, but I don't think they're legally required to be kept segregated. They are required to be used for indigent patient care. That's the mandate of the county hospital districts is indigent patient care. The maintenance and operations fund or maintenance and operations expenses are defined as all expenses for which property taxes may lawfully be spent, and I think anything that the hospital spends money on lawfully is going to be expended for indigent patient care.
They're not allowed to be used as a substitute for property taxes. So would it be appropriate to notify taxpayers on the truth in taxation, including a fund that is specifically prohibited by law from being used in a determination of what the tax rate will be?
I think the answer to that problem, Judge, is not less disclosure, but more disclosure. Let the public know part of this money is DSPRO funds. And if these DSPRO funds somehow cause us to lose tax revenue, then we're in danger of losing the DSPRO funds. But not, well, let's just hide this from the taxpayers so they don't know about this other money just in case they might decide, because we have this extra money, they don't need to pay as much taxes.
What funds, in your view, are not included in the statute?
In my view, everything that comes in that's not debt service, interest and sinking funds, and is not encumbered by corresponding existing debt obligation does fall within the general fund or the maintenance and operations fund.
Why didn't they agree
those terms are synonymous.
Why didn't they just say all funds?
Because they divided it into two categories, interest and sinking fund and everything else, maintenance and operations fund or general fund. They didn't say all funds because that would be one line which would include both the debt service requirement and the general financial requirement of the maintenance and operations fund.
Any other questions? That concludes the oral arguments for today. These clauses are all submitted on briefs and oral arguments. Marshall will adjourn the court.
All right. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas.